Hello, I'm afraid I'm feeling a bit queer. Dylan Gaiman. Oh my god, I almost forgot my name.
And I'm fluffy and a good judge of character. Trix Mix.
Oh my god, I love that. This is the Nanny and Niles pod where one gay man and his best girl rewatch the 1993 show The Nanny. One episode each week. Ready?
Ready.
So we're back after 1 week off.
Hey guys.
So nice to be back in the studio with you today.
Yeah, aka my sunroom.
The synopsis for season one, episode four, quote unquote, the nut. Wow. I thought I would be able to do this, and I'm definitely struggling. Nuckschlep. Is it Nuckschlep?
Nuckschlep.
I feel like it was a k.
Yeah.
She definitely was like Nuckschlep. Synopsis provided by IMDb. When Fran acts as a chaperone on Maggie's date, Maggie's boyfriend shows interest in Fran.
Ooh, dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. So, as you know, if you've been following us there thus far, we have a signature cocktail and a signature snack every week, which you can see the last couple ones already on Instagram and TikTok. And you can see this week's signature cocktail and signature snack later this week before our next episode following next week. So this week I did three drinks to amp up your movie date experience, which was a slushy margarita, Applejack and Coke, and a hey sis, a little turn on high C. Tonight we are both drinking a nice, fantabulous margarita slushy.
Yum. And I, for my signature snack, made a popcorn bar. So right now I'm nomming on some truffle parmesan popcorn. So basically I had two kinds. I had a sweet and savory. So Dylan, what do you have on yours?
Well, I did a fun little mixture. So I started with the, you know, regular popcorn. I added the, what was it, buttered olive oil spray. And then I put the garlic salt on top of that. And then I took a bunch of the chocolate, the chocolate shell popcorn.
Ooh,
and put it on top.
It has like a chocolate drizzle, yep.
And then I added the white chocolate chips.
Yum, how fun. Mm-hmm. Like sweet and salty. So what my favorite part, well, the favorite part, I cannot talk right today. My favorite part about this popcorn bar is it's, you know, it's a little bougie and it's a little, you know, like movie theater, you know, I took a Hershey shell, like melted chocolate, and you just drizzle it over popcorn and put it in the freezer for like 2 seconds, and it just hardens and it becomes just like this chocolate popcorn. And then I have a plain popcorn, and in the little spray bottles, I put black truffle olive oil and butter olive oil. So you have a choice. So you spray a little bit of the oil and you put the fixing. So I have like coconut flakes and I have white chocolate chips. I have, you know, even Old Bay seasoning, sea salt garlic powder and everything bagel powder. So there's just a variety of stuff. It's great.
I would say it's bougie on a budget.
Perfect.
Because I don't think everything's there pretty like cheap, easy to get. Nothing's too fancy where you have to go to like a bougie grocery store to get.
Exactly. And you know what? The black truffle oil, it wasn't even black truffle oil. It was black truffle flavored olive oil. And it was just enough to get that truffle flavor. And it was, you know, fine. And you just, you know, you drizzle all the other, you know, powders and Parmesan cheese just kind of sticks to it. It's really great and easy. It was like a few minutes to put together. It was great.
Now that I'm thinking about my popcorn choices, it reminds me of, I want to say, you know, I don't think it's, maybe it is my date with the president. No, it's not my date with the president's daughter. It's another movie. It might have been Disney, original movie. And it was another type of like, some dude has like a date with a president's daughter or a princess. I think it was a princess.
Uh-huh.
And they go to the movies and they put like M&Ms in the popcorn.
Yes.
And I always thought that was really fun. I don't do that. I do Reese's Pieces.
Oh my god, me too. I'll do Reese's Pieces. I love even the slushy pairing with the popcorn. I love it because it's the sweet and salty.
Oh, yeah.
And I was going to do M&M's. Another thing I saw at the grocery store was Butterfinger Bits. It's basically just crushed up Butterfingers. And I was like, oh, this is fun. I didn't get it because I was like, I have way too many sweets, you know, on the menu already. So I said, I'll leave that behind. But I figured maybe I'll mention it because it was a great idea. You can crush up candy and just like put it in there, you know?
Yeah, I know. One thing, when I used to go to the movies, I haven't really done it since COVID except for once to see the new Fantastic Beast movie. But when I used to go a lot, I loved to get the it's like pretzel chips, but coated in dark chocolate. So it was like dark chocolate pretzel chips. And at some point, I like couldn't find them anymore. They just didn't have them at, I don't know if it was Carmike or AMC, because this theater used to be Carmike and now is AMC. So I'm not sure if it was before or after.
I remember you used to mention this before, and I was like, yeah, I remember seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, ever since COVID, certain things went away.
And then the other thing that they have great there is those like bag nuts with like the dried up fruit. They have like a theme, like it's like something cashew, and something pistachio, and something almond. Like those are good.
Yeah, I mean, bag nuts, I'm in.
So let's get into the episode. Fran finds Niles sneezing, and he says that he's feeling a bit queer. Now, we've been waiting for this. She says, just get out of the closet already. We have been waiting for this since the beginning of this podcast.
It's, I love that, you know, he's in the butler's pantry, and he's just kind of, like, dying. But I thought it was so sweet how Fran checked his temperature with her lips.
Mm-hmm.
She just gave him a kiss on the forehead. And honestly, I've seen moms do it where they'll put like their cheek maybe against, you know, your forehead, and immediately you can tell. Mm-hmm. I know for me, for my son, my 3-year-old, or my daughter, I can tell when they have a fever already. And then the doctor will be like, what's the temp? In my head, I can't pinpoint the exact temperature, but I know they have a fever.
Yeah, my mom definitely used to do that too.
That's so sweet.
But he says that he's not queer gay. He's queer as in ill. She's like, you British people, you look like us, you talk like us, but in the end, you're still foreign. So Fran sends him upstairs. She sends him upstairs. And then she says she will let him know when dinner is ready. The kids mock the idea of her cooking, but the joke is on them because she is ordering Chinese food.
Yeah, I honestly, it's every go-to. I had Chinese tonight because I was just like, I'm not cooking. I'm not making anything. So I thought that was really cool. I was craving the chicken wings and I had just the steamed white rice. And then I had John's, you know, a little bit of his pork fried rice. And then I had the wonton soup, and then it was like I ordered broccoli with garlic sauce and an egg roll. And it's crazy because I feel like when I order Chinese, I always have to order a lot. And I'm sure that's like the same way for you. Yeah, you just order everything.
Oh my God. I was just watching a episode of Gilmore Girls yesterday. Yeah, yesterday. And they order like a ridiculous amount, and like Lorelai's father's like, that's a ridiculous amount. It's just three of us. You can't order all of this Chinese food. She's like, no, we'll eat a third of it and then we'll live on it for the next week and a half. And that's totally how it goes, right? You binge on it as much as you can stuff into your stomach, and then you have so much leftovers. I actually got to the point where I take my glass of Tupperware and I like build meals. I'm like, here's some rice, here's like a little bit of sauce, and I throw some like meat in there.
That's great. Yeah.
And I always eat like my sesame chicken or my walnut chicken with hot sauce.
I love it.
And I love the Chinese hot sauce, which I specifically asked for. She goes, how many packets do you want? I said 8. I got 0.
I love how they ask you how many now. I mean, today I just got handfuls of it. But I saved it.
You got the hot sauce?
Yeah, they just put it in there.
What the hell?
Yeah, but the thing is, ironically, I did not have any. I just found it at the bottom of the bag after the meal, and I said, oh.
Well, I didn't even know about it until they randomly gave it to me. Because once in a while, they'll throw in the spicy mustard or the hot sauce. And I'm like, oh, this shit's bomb. And then when I ask for it, they don't give it to me. But
times are hard. Inflation. It's inflation.
So I'm getting a little tired of depressed Grace.
Yeah.
Because she's like, oh, what do you want for, or no, she said, I'm feeling shrimp for Chinese food. What are you feeling, Grace? And she goes, like, a little, like, loss or like, unseen or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I'm getting a little tired of the depressed Grace. I understood that, like, that's what her thing was in the beginning, but I felt like, you know, as Fran's in there and, like, we're four episodes in, it's being very present, especially with the whole Brighton thing with the smoking.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, he didn't tell on you, so maybe he likes you. All the kids like her so much. It's like, why aren't we're not really seeing a progression in Grace yet. We're seeing it in Maggie, we're seeing it in Brighton, but not in Grace. And I'm like, can we get there?
Yeah, I wonder if she's gonna have like her own episode, like with her own issues. I feel like maybe it will come about. But yeah, it's this episode, I just felt like she was a little bit more subdued and just, I mean, she was still funny and adorable, but she seemed like a depressed little girl. And I was just like, you know,
There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah,
it's just
nothing.
Becoming repetitive at this point.
Yeah. Like she was just kind of down this whole episode.
But I guess the mention or her like acting depressed in that moment comes forth later when Maxwell says, we'll make sure she gets a good fortune cookie. So like that kind of lands the joke. Cause I guess if she wasn't like that earlier, it wouldn't have been so good for him to say that later.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully she'll wake up.
Well, Eddie from the first episode is back. He's a little cutie patootie. Oh,
he's adorable.
And we all know him now as a man, so he's not a little boy like he is in this show at the moment. So we just know what he's turning into, and we're very happy to see his beautiful face. He's delivering the Chinese food, so he works in catering, and he works at the Chinese food, apparently. Does this kid go to school? Because he seems to be portrayed as older than her, but I'm like, but how much older than her is he? Like, is he out of school? Is he in college? Is he, like, a senior? Like, what's going on?
I mean,
why is he working so much?
They mentioned that he's saving up for Yale, but...
Oh, yeah. So he can't be in school yet.
So he's he's got to be maybe, you know, a senior. But how do you save up for Yale? You save up, but... You know, he's delivering food, he's serving, you know, at banquet events, you know, so I like to believe that he's, and you can tell he's goal-driven, because he, you know, as the, you know, show progresses, you know, he's showing interest, you know, he wants to be an actor, but he's, you know, I won't give it away yet, but he's showing some initiative there at the end. You know, so I don't want to jump to the end of the episode.
I'm gonna not jump to him wanting to be an actor by telling you he wants to be an actor.
Yeah, I pretty much gave it away, but there's a little more to it, and maybe I'll get to it or not.
So he asked Maggie out on a date, and she says yes. Now, Fran's like, we waited an hour and a half for our food, so you can come in and talk to Maggie because all the other people can wait if we had to wait. I have waited a long time for delivery, and I hate that. Oh my God, I've seen like TikToks or, you know, stuff on the Instagram reels where someone's like staring out of the window and he's like, he or she is like, me after I just ordered my DoorDash or my Grubhub. It's just like, as soon as you order that delivery, you're just like immediately wanting it. And like, you can't wait any longer.
Right. I mean, I would just definitely just be, you know, I was thinking about it today too. I said, you know, you look out the window or you're just like looking out into the abyss or whatever. And you're like, are they coming? Are they, as if it's going to be, if they're going to come, as if they're going to come faster when you're literally looking out the window. But, you know, it's, especially nowadays when we live in a world where there's just very little patience, I think, yeah, we definitely expect it. But just imagine, though, if that's what your delivery person is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I do that where I'm like, I wonder what they're doing right now. If they're walking slowly or if they're walking, you know, fast, are they hustling? You know, there's some people that don't have that second gear. So who knows, right?
So speaking of, when she was saying, you know, we had to wait an hour and a half, you can come in and say, you can spend time with us because everyone can wait since we waited. That made me think about, like, delivery guy porn. And like, you always think about the, like, sometimes you think about the logistics in these like specific genres or categories.
Yeah.
And you're like, but like, if you're coming in to like have sex
yeah.
when you're delivering pizza or Chinese food,
yeah.
like, what about your other, do you not have other orders to get to? Like, are you just going to make them wait? Is this the last order of the day? Like, what's going on here?
There's got to be like no standard for this restaurant. Like, you've got to have like the crappiest
yeah.
restaurant, like that literally doesn't care. They're just like, you know, you'll call the restaurant and be like, it's been 45 minutes. And they'll just be like, well, it's taking longer. We have a lot of orders. I guess you can give that same excuse to single person.
Yeah.
But when is it going to come to a head when you piss so many people off that, you know? And nowadays, it's very cruel. There's reviews. The reviews are helpful, but also reviews are make it or break it for restaurants. For any establishment.
Reviews in general. I'd be looking on Amazon when I'm buying things, and sometimes you get like a lot of good reviews, and they have like one or two bad ones that are like, oh, well, this like, it's just like such contradicting
yes. stuff
that's like, you're kind of wondering like, is the product bad or are you just stupid?
Exactly. I mean, there's people that will complain about assembly of like certain yeah. things, and really, there's some people that are just more patient. Again, goes back to what I said about patience. Mm-hmm. And then there's some people that are just not so patient. And then they, you know, maybe break the product or just like it falls apart in their hands. And then they immediately want to just take it out on that review and just say, oh, this is a horrible, horrible item. So yeah, I mean, I like to just take a look. There's mixed reviews all the time. So I try to be a little bit more rational, or maybe just, I feel like it's the source, too, mm-hmm. like where the review is coming from.
Well, I just bought bar mats so I can, like, have something cute to, like, make my drinks on. And all of these people were giving, like, several people, not a huge portion. It was definitely a small portion. That's why I decided to buy from this brand. But some people were saying, like, oh, it comes folded, and then you get this crease in the middle, and it's permanent. And then someone else commented and said, it's not permanent. All you have to do is line it on a like wax paper, put it in the oven at your lowest setting for like 10 minutes, I think it was, and the crease comes right out, which it did. So I'm like, oh, look at that. Like, you have all these people complaining about this specific thing. I mean, yes, it's definitely a pain, but I mean, if you're going to get a good quality mat that's like, you know, a decent size that has to be folded, then it's an easy fix.
Yeah, I think a lot of times we expect perfection, and I get it, a product should come out as, you know, advertised, but there's some things, even restaurants or, you know, any establishment, we always expect perfection, and it makes the customer service, you know, industry a lot harder, because people are definitely like high expectations on everything. I mean, you should have high expectations, but I think there's still some forgiveness and some, you know, kind of rationality you should have when it comes to, you know, certain things. Not every establishment is going to be perfect to the T, or not every item is going to be perfect to the T. I think it requires some patience, you know. I think I need a counter for the word patience, because I said it like 10 times in the last 2 minutes.
Cece and Maxwell are in the study. He tells her that she should have someone who loves her to come home to. She is thinking that Maxwell is about to propose, but he's giving her a puppy instead. And then the dog doesn't like Cece, but seems to like Fran.
That was priceless. I mean, she was definitely on the, Maxwell. That was super embarrassing, but she played it off really good, because at this point he sits her down. I mean, the setup was really good. You know, Cece and Maxwell, you know, are in his office. You know, he sits her down on the couch, and he kind of kneels down a little bit, right?
And I think he does, probably to get like on the dog's level.
Yes, just to actually. This was even before the dog, just to like get on her level.
Yeah.
So it seems like he was going to tell her something super sincere, which he technically does tell her something sincere, but not to the level that she expected.
Well, it's funny because you would typically bend on your knee and then slip the ring on, and he like bend on his knee and like slip the leash on her hand.
Yes, definitely around her wrist. And it was just funny because, the fact that he's, you know, down on his knees and then had her hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was definitely some proposal stuff going on. And then it was, you know, Niles came in with the dog.
Oh, and yeah. She goes, oh, an engagement dog. And he goes, what? And she goes, oh, what an engaging dog.
And then Fran comes in and the dog immediately gravitates, you know, toward Fran. And I think, you know, it was, I feel like maybe that's Fran Drescher's dog.
Because it was so, like, attached to her?
Yes. Yeah. And the fact that it... I mean, I get it. They train these dogs. But the dog even wasn't looking at, the, you know, anything particular, you know, by the camera. Sometimes mm-hmm. they tend to look at the owner or yeah. something. But the dog was completely, like, so into Fran.
Yeah.
And then when Cece grabbed the dog from Fran, mm-hmm. it, like, immediately growled, like, argh! You know, so
this is something similar to the Bewitched show. So I know there's like an episode about this dog that like keeps on going to her.
Yeah.
Like he's just like, I forget what the joke was, but I know like it was like a thing that like the dog kept going to Samantha.
Yeah. It's so, you know, another dog that in a show that reminds me of all of this is in that show, Frasier.
Mm.
There was a Jack Russell Terrier dog in that show, and it was so well trained. And I remember seeing some kind of a clip. It was like the making of it, you know, and the dog just knows, obviously very good, but looks at the owner, and you could tell it's kind of getting some kind of guidance. Yeah.
Well, don't underestimate the power of a treat or peanut butter, because I'm pretty sure in the Bewitched that you had like a treat, or I don't think maybe it wasn't a treat. Maybe it was like bacon or like some kind of meat that like the dog was just like, phew, like I'm going towards that piece of meat because I'm like salivating for it. And I know in Cujo they had the dogs like race after the car, and I believe they put like peanut butter on like the bumper, and that's why they were like going after it.
Love it. Honestly, I have four dogs, and I usually use the word peanut butter, and they come running inside when I need them to come in on a whim. I say the word peanut butter and they immediately come running. So,
hey, I would
kind of believe that. Yeah. I believe it.
So she calls, she says that he looks like a chestnut. So she's like, oh, Cece, you should call him Chester. I'm like, oh, that's cute. But obviously, like, he's more taken to her than to Cece. And she's like, it's not my fault that, Niall says, he's fluffy and has a good judge of character.
that was my favorite.
But this is a dog birthday present. I don't know if this is the best gift for a birthday present. I think the only reason why she's like, oh, thank you for the present and like so into it is because she's so into Maxwell and she's just trying to impress him. Like, no one, unless like they've talked about how much they want a dog, no one wants a dog as their birthday present. Like, you can't just assume someone wants that responsibility.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. I mean, obviously, I feel like they did it for the aesthetic of the show, but mm-hmm. it was just hilarious that it was a dog. You need a companion, and it was...
But I guess Maxwell's, like, presented it as clueless a little bit.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense, too, that he would just...
Just typical,
it's
just, you know.
Silly,
just,
it's such
yeah.
a silly choice.
Yeah, just I definitely see him just doing that. Like, just giving a present, not thinking it through. Just, mm-hmm. here you go, because this is the best thing I can give you.
So, obviously, this is, like, a B storyline. That's something that's going to, like, come up later in the episode. Now we're going back to the A storyline where we're talking about the date. So Fran tries to convince Maxwell to let Maggie go on the date. Eddie is going to Yale, she enforces, which Maxwell seems impressed by, but to study drama. Apparently Maxwell doesn't like actors. I don't know if he doesn't like actors since he works in Broadway. That's like his job. So I think it's just he doesn't want his daughter to date an actor. Because even though he enjoys their work, he knows the kind of people or kind of personalities that they have or lifestyles that they pursue. So that was a little interesting, in my opinion.
I love that, you know, in this scene, you know, definitely, you know, Fran walks in, you know, proposes that idea of Maggie, you know, going on a date. And immediately Maxwell is just tell her no.
Yeah.
Just automatic. And I wasn't surprised, you know, I feel like any parent, whether it's a dad or mom, could just, you know, kind of say that, just an automatic no. But they talk about, you know, the schooling and how, you know, Eddie is saving up for Yale and, you know, he's impressed by that. But then obviously, you know, the actor part, I don't know why there's always just a, like a stigma again, you know, with that. Because obviously, you know, if you want to be an actor, it's always a hard start. Yeah. It's like, you know, you have to go on auditions and you have to find a job that's flexible, but you also have to move to a city that is, you know, obviously you have to be closer to where all the auditions are, all the shows. So most likely you're going to be living in the city, which is typically very expensive. So how really do you make it work?
Yeah. You know, I guess that could be a big reason why he wouldn't want her to date an actor, is because not only would he want to move to somewhere that is high in that kind of real estate of having that job, but there's a lot of traveling in general. You know, even though you move to New York City, you move to Georgia, there's a lot of filming in Georgia. If you move to California or Hollywood, you might live there, but you're still probably going to travel to like the other states. And then there's a lot of great filming locations in Canada that I know a lot of shows will go up there to do. And I think it, like a lot of it's tax break too. Yeah. I think Georgia is actually so big in filming for TV shows because of the tax breaks.
Yeah. I mean, and at this point, you know, their cities are all very expensive. So what kind of job do you really get?
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be flexible enough, you know, that will accommodate, you know, auditions on a whim. I mean, the acting world does not accommodate anyone's schedule. You know, you show up when you're asked to show up. I say this as if I've done it, but I'm just, you know, I've watched a lot of it, or maybe I've seen a lot of posts about, you know, people starting out, you know, with acting and everything. And also, you know, in this scene, again, you know, we see Maxwell and Fran having kind of like a parent like debate. And I'm familiar with it, where Maxwell is basically saying, great, I'm the ogre and you're like the good, you're the good guy. Meaning Fran is pushing, you know, for, you know, Maggie to be able to go on this date, and Maxwell just really wants to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge debate for parents sometimes. I know, you know, there's certain cultures or certain, you know, just parents in general. You know, when do you allow your kid to date? When are they old enough? And there was a phrase there that was said by Fran, which was like, I think, really nice. And it does make sense. She said, if you don't let them in the front door, they'll start sneaking out the window. And I've snuck out of windows before, specifically my friends, you know, back in high school, because her parents were strict. So we had no choice but to, you know, sneak out her window. And I sucked at it. My mom trusted me, so I didn't really have to sneak out too much, but I did do a lot of things behind her back. Sorry, Mom. But yeah, sneaking out the window, it's so true. Like, if you want to be involved in your kids' lives, or if you want them to let you in, you kind of have to give a little, you have to give a little, like you have to give way a little bit. So I feel like that was the message I got from that. And I love that she did say that, because sometimes parents do need to hear it. Even I need to hear it just to loosen up a little bit, you know?
Honestly, I found this a little bit shocking, because now that I'm thinking more and more about this, there are definitely a lot of parallels between this show, or at least the family and the situation of how they live is very similar to Gilmore Girls. Yeah. You know, they both have big houses, you know, they have a lot of money. You know, it's not New York, obviously. Gilmore Girls is in Connecticut. But you know, Rory goes to a private school just like Maggie does, and they both had the cotillion, which we had last week, I think it was the cotillion. And well, not last, because we didn't have a podcast last week, you know, 2 weeks ago, the last time we had one. But the grandfather in Gilmore Girls made it very apparent that going on a lot of dates is very important as a young woman, because, you know, that's what the whole, like, cotillion thing. It's like all about socializing and like broadening the people that you know, and, you know, getting to know a lot of people, creating a lot of connections.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I think also, this is where they come up with that term, the nuckschlep, because Maxwell agrees to allow her to go on the date. Right.
But so Fran has to be the chaperone.
Yeah. And Fran's like, why do I have to be the chaperone? Because it's like the worst thing you could be sometimes. It's like, you know, it's uncomfortable. And then you're not really they're not going to look at you as the fun person. You're not supposed to even be there. You're there to monitor them. Mm-hmm. So I remember when you asked me, do you know what that means? I was like, no. But you were like, oh, you're going to find out. What that means. And when they said that, I was just like, wow, this is hilarious, because you're basically just like, it's just a whole nother level of the word chaperone. You're literally just, you're the buzzkill, you're the cop block, you're just you're the no fun person basically on this date. So that was funny.
So in this moment, Fran is explaining the title of the episode, the nuckschlep, meaning the third wheel, the chaperone, as you've explained. Surprisingly, Maggie is excited that Fran will be with her on her first date.
That caught me by surprise.
It did for me, too, because I think it was definitely building up to the fact that, like, oh, this isn't going to be a good thing that she's going to have to tell her. She's like, oh, well, I'm going to have to tell her that your dad is making me come with you. And, yeah, you know, you don't want me there. You want to do your own thing, you know? But surprisingly, she's just such a nervous wreck that she's like, thank God that you're going to be there with me, because he's so fucking cute and I just can't handle it.
I honestly would not even do, I don't know what I would do with myself. He's so cute. Let's just put that on the record. But anyway, I just think, I was so surprised. I really was so surprised when Maggie was like, oh, thank God. And also, as far as, like, I cannot remember. Did she mention something about, I'll be sitting next to you? I feel like she said that.
Yeah, she was basically saying, you mean, I'm going to have to go on a date with this really cute boy, and you're going to be sitting next to me the whole time?
That's it.
And she kind of perceives it in that way. She, like, shows it as it, she's like, looks like I'm not going to enjoy this.
Yeah.
She's like, oh my God, I can't believe this. But then she switches on a dime, like, obviously for the TV show drama.
Yeah,
and she's
about
like,
plot,
thank God.
Yeah, plot twist. Like, it was just like, you know, yeah, it really definitely caught me off guard. So if that was their intent, well done.
I definitely think that I've thought of guys being like more attractive than me or being like so strung out. But thankfully, I'm really good at like setting a tone for my mindset when I'm interacting with people. So I can like register how cute some guy is when, you know, back in the dating world, when I was dating, I've been in a relationship for 7 years. So it's been a while, but back in that time, I would just be like, okay, we've registered that you're really hot and I am a little nervous, but now I'm going to put on this like mindset that, you know, I'm just going to treat you like any regular person. And I'm not going to, like, let my nerves show. And thankfully, I was able to control that enough to, like, win over guys that were, like, more attractive than me or, you know, overcompensated my nervousness by how attractive they were. Yeah. And, it's good.
I feel like for me when I was dating, I mean, I remember, you know, if I, you know, dated someone that was, like, super, super cute, I would definitely think it in my head. Like, I would just look at this person and I'm like, wow, you're, like, really cute. I don't know if you're out of my league or my self-esteem is just not there, but I have no idea. But, I mean, it's like I was confident, but at the same time, I would be like, wow, you're really cute. Mm-hmm. And I just, in my head, I couldn't shut up about it. And then obviously, you know, talking to my girlfriends, you know, before or after a date, whatever it was, I'm just like in awe, you know. But if the guy wasn't as good looking, then I would just really not be nervous. I was like, oh, I'm in charge. It's like, oh, I'm so confident. Why is that, right?
Yeah.
But it happens. It really does. In every situation, there, you know, there's the good looking one. There isn't, you know, you just, it's amazing how a person's looks could change your point of view or the way you feel. Yeah. You know, you can just, like, someone looks so good, all of a sudden you get really nervous, but they're just like any other human being. And you're, maybe there's a possibility you're smarter than they are, or vice versa, or however it is. It's literally just looks.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, when we're talking about some chaperones and first dates, I'm thinking of when I was probably like 5 years old when I think I had my first date. You know those plastic picnic tables you have as a kid?
Yes.
Well, my like girlfriend, quote unquote, from 5 years old, we had a spaghetti dinner at one of those plastic picnic tables right in the living room in front of the TV. I want to say, oh my God, I forgot. For the longest time, I remembered what movie was playing, but I can't even anymore.
It wasn't Lady in the Tramp, right? It's been a long time.
No, I don't think so.
Registered with the spaghetti.
But that would be, I guess, a chaperone date when I was five, because obviously, like, the family's in the kitchen eating, and, like, me and her are at our little plastic picnic table, dinner, spaghetti dinner, watching TV, and that was my first date, and I'm pretty sure it was my only chaperone date.
And then, little did we know, the plot was gonna twist.
Yeah.
So, it wasn't gonna be her anymore.
Anyways. So, Fran, Maggie, and Eddie are at the movies, and Fran asks a woman and her husband to move down so there will be room for all three of them to sit together. The woman tells her husband to move down for the nuptial. He responds, looks too young for a nuptial. The woman explains, you don't have to be old, you just have to be a loser. The couple continue to make jokes and comment on Fran being the third wheel, which this is probably my favorite part of the episode.
Me too.
Just like, commentary was really fucking funny. It was just a really nice add-in, and like, we don't get their names, but they were some very interesting characters.
Honestly, at this point, they were my, you know, one of my, well, both were my favorite, because they were just making funny, savage comments.
Yeah.
I mean, I even, you know, wrote down savage. That's it. Old couple. So savage.
Old couple savage.
That's it. Because they were literally just coming at her. But for some reason, when it's the elderly saying these things, it's, you know, you take it with a grain of salt and you move on. You know, you'd have to be a real asshole to just be like, let me fight with these, you know, elderly people. But at this point, I love that they were, you know, they were just like coming for her. And obviously, you know, we always hate having to ask that person to move aside just to make room, you know, because when you sit down at the movie theater, you're comfortable. You don't want to be bothered, you know. But in this case, obviously, they needed to make room. I'm just surprised that Fran, you know, didn't sit in the back. But then again, that would change the whole storyline.
Yeah.
If Fran sat in the back, because, you know, then, you know, they wouldn't have that interaction. I really did wish Fran sat in the back, though, but and kind of like let Maggie have her, you know, moment. But again, it would have changed the storyline. So,
yeah. Well, Fran mentions to the couple, she says, are you going to talk through the whole movie? Are you someone who likes to talk during the movie or like a TV show? I am, because me and Tay have actually been watching the first season of American Crime Story, The People versus OJ, and I cannot tell you how many times I have paused this fucking TV show to like, because like, especially with my man, like, I like to, you know, stimulate my brain and like hear his thoughts and express my thoughts, and kind of like, in something like this, you're like, okay, is this person innocent? Is this person guilty? Do we believe him? Do we not believe him? And there's just so much stuff going on in a trial that you can share your opinion about, or like, or whatever. Anyway, so it probably took us like 2 hours to watch one episode, which is like 45 minutes long, just because how many times they fucking press pause.
So when you paused it, did you guys discuss?
Yeah, it's like constantly pausing to discuss.
This is the thing. When John and I watch a movie, we try not to touch the remote at all. It's almost like if you missed it, you're asked out. There are times when I'll rewind because I'm pretty positive I have like ADHD because sometimes I'm watching, but I'm not, it's not registering. So I'll rewind, but it's very, very rare. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I do find myself asking him questions.
Yeah.
You know, here and there, what's happening, what's going on, or did you hear that? What did he say? What did he say again? You know, but I really try not to do it because I know if I ask and I stop to talk, I'm just going to be interrupting the next thing and then I'm going to miss that. So then I get it, the pause button.
You got to use the pause button.
I it's crazy because I would, but at the same time, it would like drive me nuts. So we both try to leave the remote control alone.
Yeah.
One, even if I, let's say I had to rewind and I screwed up, we're kind of just like, oh, like, I'll be like, why did I do that? You know, but it, yeah, at this point, it depends who I'm watching it with too. Like sometimes if I, you know, if I need to pause, that's fine. You know, like it's okay. But when it's me and my husband, we just kind of, you know, we just like really watch the whole thing at its entirety. But it's funny because him and I will rant at the same time about something, you know, like if something happens, we're like, oh my God, this is, why did that happen? You know, like we both go at it at the same time. It's kind of funny. I don't know. Maybe we've been together so long that, you know, we have similarities with the way we do certain things. But in a way, I kind of like it because, you know, that's how I roll with movies. I kind of just want to watch it and absorb it. And if I missed a certain moment, sometimes, I don't know, I think in my head, I can always rewatch it or I can always rewind it, but I don't feel like it. And then I just move on.
Yeah, there you go. So another thing this is making me think of is, so the husband of the couple goes, what did she say? And then the wife says, oh, she's reminiscing about like the good old days before she was boring. And it just gave me like very good, like people watch feel. Like they're just kind of like, before the movie starts, they're just like sitting there and like overhearing the conversation of Fran and like Maggie. And they're just like commentarying. They're commenting. They're commenting on the conversation. God damn it. Why can't I speak today? But I have had dates in the past where like we're sitting in the restaurant, we're like waiting for our food and we're looking around and you're like giving a little story for like different people that you see. You know, you see like a young woman and an old guy and you're like, oh, well, obviously like he's the sugar daddy or you're...
Absolutely.
And that's and always like it. Super fun to like come up with a story.
I love it. I kind of like do this thing sometimes where I have a commentary in my head of like what's going on. And sometimes if I, you know, if I have time, like, or if I'm with someone, I'll be like, hey, look at that couple right there. Or look at those people over there. And like, I'll be like, oh, this is what the guy's saying. This is what the girl's saying. I'll kind of do a little voice commentary. So it's kind of funny. Will and I actually, my other friend, you know, we did this thing for a little bit. Yeah, we would sit at Wawa. And, you know, Wawa, if you don't know what Wawa is, it's a convenience store. It's just a one-stop shop type thing, you know, to get snacks. You can get, you know, just, it's like Pennsylvania's like ultimate store, just, and it's wide open, like it's all glass. So if you're parking up front, you can see what's going on inside.
Yeah.
So that was the glory of that. So sometimes me and my best friend Will would sit and, you know, we would park in front of Wawa and we would just watch the people that would go in. I know it sounds creepy, but we would get our snacks and we would just watch the people. And I remember one time there was this guy that would, I think we would consistently go at the same time every night. So this guy would always park almost in a similar parking spot. He would wear this cert. It was like a cert like type of shirt. And we're like, what is a cert? And it's like a certified volunteer training person. But he was like really cute. And he just, it was like all black. And it said cert on the back of his shirt. And he would specifically stand outside of his truck. And he would just smoke a cigarette. And then he would get back in and he would drive off. And then that is when the storyline begins, because we would say, you know, he's probably, you know, rushing to go to work, you know, and it's probably 2 hours away in South Jersey somewhere. I don't know a Y in South Jersey. But one night we actually physically ran into him because we were at Wawa and somehow he came early, or maybe we came later, and we just made eye contact, you know, just our eyes met. And it was just so funny, you know, after, you know, making up all these stories, and after a while you just believe it. So I almost said to him, wow, you must have a long drive to South Jersey.
Maggie begins to worry if she is too quiet. Fran confirms her suspicions. So when Eddie comes in with popcorn, she yells, hello, I love popcorn. Maggie tries to make a joke about the size of the soda, but it flops. Fortunately, the movie starts and the attention is taken off of her. So, oh God, I feel so bad for her. That poor thing. Like, come on. Like, she's like, am I being too quiet? Friend's like, yeah, you know, just like talk more, not talk louder. Yeah. Like, you don't have to yell at the, oh my, I just don't understand why she thought that was a good option.
But I love that, you know, like Fran is, I mean, because Fran is so natural. She's like, oh, these drinks are so big. You know, they need their own lifeguard.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
he says, oh, mine has an undertow, you know, and yeah. it's just, and then she goes, oh, mine's so big, I probably won't finish it. You know, it completely flops. And the thing is, I know, you know, I've been in those situations before, you know, maybe someone tries too hard because they just want to be funny, but really, you know, just be yourself, you know, you're charming. And, you know, sometimes opposites attract. Like if he's, you know, a little funnier, a little more eccentric, he's an actor, or, you know, he's not as shy, maybe, you know, he can go for a Maggie that's yeah. more on the shy side and maybe not so sure of herself yet, you know.
And that's probably the situation. Obviously, he likes her for a reason.
Yes, absolutely.
But then she says that she has the gift of gab, and that reminded me of a Sabrina the Teenage Witch episode where I think it's probably the last season where she works at a news office and she wants to like have more spunk to like really stand out as a writer. So she like casts this spell to have gift of gab, and then she ends up talking too much.
Yeah.
And I'd like, that's exactly what where my brain went to as soon as I heard her say gift of gab.
I honestly, my only wish for this scene was, you know, I love the couple, the older couple that was like savage. I wish there was more of an interaction. Like I would have liked to see more. Mm. I feel like it was so quick. I feel yeah. like, you know, they had their interaction with the elderly couple, you know, asking them to move over. And then right after that, you know, Fran and Maggie kind of have a quick exchange because Maggie's just expressing, you know, how nervous she is and how unsure she is of what she should do. And then Eddie comes in with the snacks, and then yeah. they have a couple of jokes, and then that was pretty much it.
I think if it was a 45-minute show, we would get more of that.
Yeah.
Because that definitely was a huge part of the show. Was a huge punch. It was, yeah. it was really, really good. But, you know, it's only like, what, a 25-minute show, so there's only so much they can do.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the time went towards the debate of, like, if she should go on this date or not.
Yeah.
So I would have liked to see, like, a few more clips of, like, their interaction and what happened. But obviously, you know, they had other plans, you know?
So now we're going to breakfast the next morning. Niles is feeling better, thank God. And he is making his favorite Belgian waffles. Maxwell asks how the date went, and Maggie sadly expresses that she had nothing to say and just sat there like a lump. And I love Brighton's response. He goes, so just like a lump, so does mashed potatoes. And everyone loves mashed potatoes.
He kind of tried to make her feel better.
Yeah. In way. It was really nice.
What cracked me up, though, too, was, you know, Niles talking about the Belgian waffles and yeah. how it's a family recipe. And he's so, you know, proud of it. I mean, he even poses, like, in the scene, you know, Niles is, like, serving the Belgian waffles. But then he moves forward, you know, closer, obviously, to the camera. And just he's so proud of it. And then Fran enters, you know, everyone's already sitting down. Everybody's already getting breakfast. But Fran enters with her fluffy robe. And Niles, you know, she looks after Niles describes, you know, the family recipe and how proud he is of this and how it's been handed down from generations to generations. She comes in and she goes, "Oh, Eggos," you know, like just calling it this frozen waffle from the freezer aisle. So I appreciated that.
So out of the three best breakfast foods, which are pancakes, waffles, and French toast, which is your go-to?
It's hard to say because I grew up in the Philippines and we would eat rice. But I have to say, I do love a good waffle.
I do love a good waffle too. I would say pancake at the bottom, waffle is definitely a step up, and then for me, French toast. I love French toast.
You know what? I have to say, I think for me, French toast, I don't know. I think pancake, oh my gosh, this is very hard. I was going to say that I like that order, French toast and then waffles and then pancakes. But the thing is, I love pancakes so much too. So I think for me, French toast, pancakes, and then I'm going to have to put waffles on the bottom. Even though
Niles would be so disappointed in you.
Sorry, Niles.
So Fran tries to cheer Maggie up while referencing the funny jokes Maggie told about the egg cream and the guy in the turban. But Maggie reminds Fran she didn't tell those jokes. Fran did.
Yeah, it's and also Maggie was like so down. Mm-hmm. I mean, in this scene, you see everyone, there's a lot of movement, you know, they're getting served breakfast and, you know, the kids are eating. Fran is, you know, doing her thing. But Maggie is literally schlepped down, like just head down. Her hair's practically, I mean, Maxwell even makes a comment about her, well, Maggie's hair hitting the syrup, you know, on her plate because of how low she is at this point.
Well, she's lumpy, just like mashed potatoes.
Yeah. And I'm just like, poor girl, you know, because it's like you know, for her, she's just like, literally failed. Like, I did not do good on this date. So she's just kicking herself. And honestly, there was like a young Trish there that was just like, just wanted to, you know, I could see myself in her where you're just like, oh, maybe the confidence is very low. But really, when you're on the outside looking in, you're like, girl, like, you're beautiful. You are, you know, you're still growing, you know, just kind of not, don't be so hard on yourself. You know, I just wanted to give her a hug.
So Fran says, boy, was I on last night because she was making all these jokes, right? This reminded me of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I'm making so many show references, but there's a lot of things that definitely pop up in my mind. And when she's saying like, oh, I was on, like when she's being funny, she's not trying to. She's not like trying to tell jokes. Just like Mrs. Maisel realized that she was a comedian just by her like ranting and like telling a story and like being herself and like just naturally funny, which I just really love. I love that kind of comedy where you can just like tell a story and it's just naturally funny.
Yeah, and I think for Fran it comes natural. Like she can just say something and it's just funny, you know. She doesn't have to work so hard, and Maggie has to think so hard about it, you know. And definitely for sure, I just, you know, I felt bad that she felt like she flopped it, you know.
Eddie calls and asks to speak with Fran. Everyone is focused on Fran while she talks to Eddie. She keeps the conversation short and responds with one-word answers. And then Fran reveals that Eddie wants to see her Friday night. And Maggie is not happy.
Oh, that was so intense. I mean, at this point, even the fact that, again, we're in the breakfast scene, a lot of movement, and all of a sudden everything stops. And Fran is just, all eyes are on her. And, you know, she's talking, okay, bye-bye. And then as soon as she gets off the phone, Maggie's like, what did he say? And she's like, Eddie says hello, and she smiles. I was kind of like, oh, I wish she said more. But again, they had different plans for this episode or just for this scene. I just felt like, why did Fran, you know, why was she so vague about it? But again, I think it's because she wanted to save it for a more private discussion with Maggie.
Yeah, she definitely didn't want to disclose what was going on in the conversation. She kind of just wanted to like sweep it under the rug because it was awkward. It was definitely very weird for her to like get a call from this young boy.
The claws were out.
She's like, all right, the call's over. Pass the syrup, please. And then Maggie goes, well, why don't you just take the syrup like you take everything else? And I'm just like, oh my God, here we go. She's coming out with these quips, and Brighton is definitely noticing. He goes, oh, Maggie, is that sarcasm?
In every situation, I think, you know, it's especially when you're in a group of people, there's going to be that someone that's going to instigate it, or someone that's going to, you know, and then Brighton, you know, acts as if he's an announcer, mm-hmm. and he's like, oh, and definitely, you know, sarcasm from Maggie.
That would be a great job for him as like an adult. He should just go into like sports casting or something like that.
Absolutely.
Or red carpet. His dad works in Broadway. He lives in New York City. That'd be great. Carpet. Just like be on there on the microphone and talking about like Emma Watson and Emma Roberts were dishing it out last week. Are they going to fight on the red carpet?
Yeah.
Ooh, look at that fabulous dress. Blah, blah, blah.
It's like definitely, there was definitely a lot of, Maggie had her claws out immediately. I mean, you could tell her teenage hormones were there. They were present. Had it been a ghost, definitely there was an energy there.
So Maggie then locks herself in her room. Fran and Maxwell start to argue over whose fault it is. Maxwell says that Fran sometimes seems more like Maggie's girlfriend rather than her nanny. This gives Fran an idea. And at this point, I'm like, where is she going with this? I didn't see what she saw. Like, she obviously like had a light bulb go above her head when he said girlfriend more than a nanny. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting.
I mean, at this point, you know, it's true. Like I have a teenage daughter and she's 14, and you dabble between like, am I too much of their friend or am I being too much of a parent? You know, I mean, how do you become, you know, it's, where do you find, you know, the right formula? There isn't, just like there's no handbook for raising kids. But in this case, you know, Maxwell calls it out because, you know, she's trying to be more like her friend. But sometimes that's what the girls need, you know? Maggie is very, very vulnerable. And, you know, again, hormones and puberty and like lots of things changing. And she's finding out a lot about herself and just still learning. So, in this scene, also the fact that Maxwell and Fran are outside of her door and she's literally, you know, Maggie's yelling, you know, just kind of leave her alone or just leave her be. I don't think I would go as far as being outside someone's room and just kind of, you know, but it happens, you know, you want to know what's going on. You want to appease.
I mean, they didn't take that. It was a little bit. Yeah, they tried, they realized what was going on and they left.
Yeah. And then they went and discussed. But again, I love the dynamic that Fran is just being like, you know, she's definitely in this role of a mom.
Yeah.
And Maxwell. And honestly, I don't even know what Maxwell would do without Fran at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I like that Fran is very lighthearted. So when she knocks on Maggie's door and goes in anyway, you know, obviously Maggie says, no, you can't come in. But, you know, Fran's like, what, did you say come in? And she had snacks, like a peace offering.
Yeah. So another thing that Maxwell mentions is that you don't have to be liked by everyone. Even Cece's dog that she just got, you know, he likes you more than her. And she goes, well, that's not my fault. That's just like animal instinct. And it definitely is. And like, I don't know, like, I do know that a huge part of communication with dogs is smells. And like, I'm just saying it, sniffing butts, like, the amount of information that a dog pulls in from just like sniffing another dog's butt. I know it's weird.
Yeah.
We're going there. I definitely read about that, and like there's just like so much they gather from that. And like we obviously exude like pheromones and stuff like that. They can smell like the chemicals, they can smell fear, you know, that whole like stereotypical thing that you've heard before.
Yeah.
And I'm a dog walker. I walk the dogs and I have this dog, and like she'll even though like different dogs, different types of people, like there's like specific dogs and people that she scares away from, and then there's others that she like gets aggressive with and starts like barking and goes nuts, and then there's others that she just like gets like very cozy up to, and she's like, oh, I'm so glad that you came over to like pet me, like I'm all into you. So it's crazy, like she, like not all dogs are that sensitive that I've experienced with my job, but this specific dog, she's a Burlington Terrier, I believe is what it is, And she's like super sensitive. Like her dramatic interaction with different dogs and different people is like intense.
Honestly, I believe that because my cousin had, you know, has a dog that essentially doesn't like really anyone that comes in the house. I feel like the dog is misunderstood, and I think it's a very smart dog, and his instincts are just very sharp, and he just knows, you know, like who he likes and who he doesn't, but he doesn't bite me. Like he's kind of nipped at other people, or they just don't go near him because, you know, but for me, I don't know what it is. If it's because I have four dogs, I could just read their body language. When I come in at the house, I go to him, I pet him, and I sometimes even will just like pick him up, and my whole family is just like in awe. Like they're like, I don't understand what Trisha has that this dog just doesn't bite her. And she's able to literally physically pick him up and pet him and just get close like that without getting bit. So I don't know. Yeah, definitely believe that.
So we're moving on to Fran. Going into Maggie's room, she's, as you said, you know, she's like, knock, knock. And Maggie's like, don't come in. And she's like, did you say come in? And she comes with the Malamars, tells Maggie that she is too old for a nanny and she should think of her more of as a friend. Fran doesn't want any guy to ruin their friendship. It's the OGC. Official Girlfriends Code. Ooh. And rule number one is never gossip about your best friend, a rule that no one follows, so we move on to rule number two. If a girl falls for a guy and the idiot guy falls for her effervescent but totally blameless friend, then the aforementioned friend is obligated to dump him.
What's your take on the Official Girlfriends Code?
What do you mean?
Like, what's her take on it? How do you...
Oh, what's my take? Yeah. I thought you said, what's her take? And I'm like, I don't... What do you mean, what's her
and
take?
And I want a Malamar. I mean, where do you find these things?
Well, apparently, you can get a pack of 12 for, like, $200 on Amazon.
Oh, right. I will now get a part-time job.
No, I mean, I think it's cute. I like what she's doing there. I mean, yes, she's choosing to be a friend more than a nanny, but the way she's doing it is kind of like... just, in my opinion, like a parenting style. Like, yeah. It's more like acting as the friend rather than actually being a friend. Because she's like, oh, you never heard of the OGC? She's like, no, what is that? And she's like, totally like falling for this like setting that she's presenting to her. And so I don't think it's really like what Maxwell was saying. Like, she's not just like being her friend rather than being her nanny. Like, she's like coming at it at a different angle, and like, this girl's like 16 years old. Like, when you're a teenager, there is a different way that you like receive information and that things actually like make sense to you. And like, because most of the times you're just going to hear what an adult has to say and it's just going to like go right past your head.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think this is like a good little lesson too for Maggie though, where, you know, she's saying, you know, you don't gossip about your friend. You know, if a guy tries to go for your friend, you know, if you both meet a guy and the guy, you know, goes for, you know, one likes the guy and then goes for the other girl, whatever it is, you just dump him. You know, she's just educating her so much about, you know, just the do's and don'ts. And I like it. I like that she did that. And also when she mentioned in this scene, you know, Maggie's, you know, on her bed, obviously Fran is coming into her space, into Maggie's space. So it's like she's proceeding with caution, has a peace offering of Malamars. And at this point she mentions, you know, you don't need a nanny, you know, for Brighton and Gracie, you know, they need a nanny, but you know, I'm more of your friend. And it's almost kind of like her officially saying, you know, Maggie, you're a young adult, you know, and I'm not here to just babysit you. You know, I'm here to guide you as well, you know, just as your friend.
And the funny thing about the peace offering is that finally when Maggie wants a Malamar, Fran says, she goes, well, another thing is when it comes to chocolate, it's every girl for herself. She's like, she ate the whole box.
And waves the empty box.
Oh my gosh.
That was great.
But I'm the same way. Like, if I have sweets or something that's good at home and it's been sitting there, I'm like, Tate, my boyfriend, my man's is, you've had your chance. You've had so many days to have, you know, this. It's gone now.
It's gone.
You know, if you're going to wait a week, it's going to be gone by the end of the week. You know, you had your chance. You can't just let it sit around, especially when it's that good. You know, when it's good stuff, you know, you got to get it when it's hot.
You got to get it. Yeah.
But then when she's talking about those rules, she also says, what do they teach you in these private schools? And I'm thinking about the fact that, like, oh, she's in a private school. She lives in New York and, you know, they're obviously like really rich. They have this really nice house. And I'm like, this is reminding me of Gossip Girl. I don't know if they've ever mentioned her school before, but I wonder if she goes to Constance, which I believe is an actual like elite school in New York.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Especially in the neighborhood that they're in.
So I'm definitely going to have to look into, if anyone is listening and would like to let me know what school she goes to, if they've ever mentioned it, I would love to have that information. You know, you can email us, TikTok comments, Instagram comments, all that jazz. So next, Fran and Maggie are now in the kitchen and Fran is now explaining Rule 27. We made it all the way to Rule 27 at this point. Just because you're dumping someone doesn't mean you shouldn't look your best. So they're getting all dolled up. Well, she's getting all dolled up because apparently she's the one that's dumping this dude who, like, this whole boyfriend thing is getting a little out of hand because, like, Maggie went on one date and she's like, oh, you stole my boyfriend. And now she's like, oh, because he asked me out for Friday, he's my boyfriend now. And now I have to dump him because of the girlfriend's code. And I'm like, okay, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, aren't we here? But Niles is caught eavesdropping, and he pretends to look for a ladle.
I love how this butler's pantry is just, like, basically, like, their little hideout to eavesdrop and listen. That was funny. Niles, honestly, he just provides, like, always just a funny comic, you know, relief that is needed, especially when there's a scene that's a little bit more serious. You know, he's there. And the fact that he's just looking for a ladle, just so, you know, sudden and subtle. It was actually really, really funny.
It's actually nice to see him in a situation where it looks like he cares. Like, he's invested in what's going on in Maggie's life. And that's, like, really sweet, too.
Yeah, because you don't expect him to really, you know, he's always just straight-faced and just, you know, serious for the most part. But he has his little quirky, you know, comments that he makes. And it's just, you know, yeah, it was nice to see him kind of like on his toes listening in.
At this point, Eddie arrives and Fran accuses him of hitting on her when he is supposed to be interested in Maggie. Eddie explains that he doesn't want to date Fran. Everyone's thrown back at this point. He wants her to give Maxwell his picture and resume for Broadway. I was like thrown. Like, yeah. I totally believe that, like, he was hitting on Fran and wanted to, like, take her on a date.
Especially with the dynamic that they had, you know, in the movie theater. I was just like, oh gosh, like, he's falling for, you know, it's like that movie, Mrs. Robinson, you know,
it's like the whole falling cougar
for,
thing, yeah.
Yes, you're falling for, you know, an older woman. And, I mean, Fran is hot. She can get it, you know, from any age, you know, anyone. But, at this point, yeah, that really did take me back. And the fact that he brought her food and, you know, he brought her ribs.
Oh, like, it's like,
I just don't understand why he, like, comes through the back door so often.
Well, I mean, this is only the second, I mean, the first time he came and he was, you know, hired. The second time, I guess, I don't know if maybe there was, like, special instructions with the Chinese restaurant that he should come to the back door when delivering.
And honestly, I think for the scene, too, they wanted, really, you know, the butler's pantry to be the place where everyone eavesdropped.
Yeah.
Because earlier in the show, Brighton and Gracie were eavesdropping from there. Niles was eavesdropping from there. So it just seemed, and it seems more of an intimate, kind of, scene, like where, you know, it's a one-on-one talk. So they're like in the kitchen,
yeah.
You know? So, I think, you know, in this case, you know, Fran, you know, opens the door, Eddie's there, he has that bag of ribs and then he has his manila envelope with, you know, the photos and, you know, all that. That really did catch me by surprise. I was not expecting that.
Yeah.
Even that he had it all thought out, Again, and that's where it where I go back to when earlier I said he's goal driven, because he had a plan. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I did not give Eddie enough credit. I honestly just thought he was kind of like, whatever. He just probably was like, I just like this girl and I'm cute and I don't have, like, I don't know. I just assumed he didn't have a brain. But that was pretty strategic that he was like, I decided to go to you because you would probably be able to push, you know.
Yeah, and he says he doesn't want to take advantage of his relationship with Maggie and be like, hey, can you get your dad to, like, would you have seen in, like, in Veronica Mars, like, that was a thing, too, with Logan Echols' sister. She's dating some, like, dude, and, like, he's, like, all into their movie star father and, like, trying to get in on that whole, like, fame streak. But, like, it's nice. He doesn't want to take advantage of Maggie. He's like, okay, I'm going to ask you because, like, I'm not trying to date you, and let's see if you'll do me a favor. But it was a great twist. I was definitely thrown by it.
Yeah, I mean, and also at this point, you know, Eddie like knew who to go to, but I thought it was really sweet that, like, he didn't want it to look like he was taking advantage of Maggie, you know, or just using her. So that was kind of cute. And then, you know, Fran is like, so you'd rather use me, and just goes back to that word push. I don't think we made an emphasis on it, but during the show, Maxwell was basically saying that Fran pushes, you know, quite a bit.
Yeah, she's a pushy. Then that's like the whole, like, premise of the show, really. You know, she got hired as this nanny, and she's a pusher. She's not only trying to do her job, but also get Maxwell to be a better father.
Yeah.
And she's always pushing that, which is great. It's a great, great drive for the show, a huge plot line that's always followed, and I think it definitely hooks in the audience.
Absolutely.
So Eddie asks Fran to then get Maggie so they can go for a walk, and Fran opens the door to the butler's pantry and finds the whole family eavesdropping at this point.
There you go. So once again, the butler's pantry becomes, you know, the place where everyone eavesdrops. And I thought it was cute because it's like they made it a theme of the show that, like, they're going to be at the butler's pantry. It started in the butler's pantry and it ended in the butler's pantry.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even think about that, because the first scene is Fran coming in. Niles is sick in the butler's pantry and he says that he's queer.
Yeah, and it was just kind of like, yeah, it just became a thing. And I love that they made that a thing. The butler's pantry. Honestly, because, like, Niles, he's a huge part of the show, obviously, but he's just here and there, here and there. Mm-hmm. I mean, but again, the show would not be the same without him. You know, he makes the whole show. So I do love that they made it, you know, like, that's his area, but they also made that, like, an important space. So it started there and it ended there.
So the last scene might be one of my favorites, just under the couple at the movie theater. Cece shows up with a coat, a fox fur collar, and Fran and Maxwell worry that it's her dog draped around her neck. But it's revealed that Chester, they're relieved. When Chester runs out and it's revealed that it's not Chester around her neck. But I'm like, that's a fox. It is not a dog. It's obviously not Chester. But obviously Chester's, like, super excited to see Fran and just, like, jumps into her arms and doesn't even care about Cece at all.
That's how savage, you know, they think Cece is, honestly, or that's how they make her out to be. That they literally were like, they saw that fox wrapped around her neck. It was just like this fur kind of like piece. And then all of a sudden Chester comes into the scene and he was fine.
I gotta say, that outfit was nice. Yeah. Like, for Cece, like, she looked like a drag queen. Like, she looked did up. She looked, and I obviously mean that in the best way, because look at RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, the way that they are so creative and, like, how fashioned they are. It's like, that was, like, fierce as fuck. Yeah. I mean, obviously hoping that fox was, like, faux, not real. It was, like, fake imitation. But, like, the whole ensemble of that outfit was great. I mean, her hair looked really good.
Yeah.
Her face looked it was pretty nice. It was delicious for Cece.
Yeah, she definitely made an entrance for sure. And it was just like, you know, she wasn't in the show a lot. You know, she wasn't in the episode, you know, she was kind of just here and there. Kind of like Niles was. But again, she provided, like, a comedic relief where, you know, she just shows up and she's like, oh, look at me.
It's time for Bestie of the Week. Well, I was originally going to go with Eddie because you get that whole twist of him being loyal to Maggie and not trying to get in with Fran. But now that I think about it more, my besties are the couple in the movie theater. That husband and wife and their like their quips and like what they were throwing at her. It was so funny. It was a great portion. We wanted more. So I'm definitely saying that was my bestie of the week.
I love it. For me, definitely it was Fran. Only because I literally...
You can't pick Fran.
Oh, because I picked her before?
Episode one.
Oh, I didn't know that was a rule.
Yeah, you can only per season. So you get to pick one. You get to pick each person once per season.
Oh, well, that throws everything off. But I did. The reason why I had initially picked her is because she gave the rules to Maggie about the girl codes and everything like that. So the fact that she took the time to say all of that, I feel like that's a lot of education for Maggie, because at this point, you know, when you're growing up as a young woman, you want someone to kind of give you the rules a little bit and like the rundown, like, hey, this is what you do and this is what you don't do. And then you kind of take it and run. I mean, if I have to, because I don't have a choice, I have to pick a different best friend, I would probably pick Niles. He was kind of
you
just...
You picked Niles last
time. I did too. So I can't have anyone at this point.
Yeah, so far you did Fran, Yetta, and Niles.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, at this point, you know what? I initially picked Fran. I can't think of anyone else. I mean, Chester. If I'm forced, that is so funny. Because I was going to pick Chester. I honestly...
There you go. Yeah. Episode four, best of the week,
yeah,
Chester.
When we said, I can't do Fran, I can't do Niles, the next thing that came to mind was Chester. And he's just so fluffy and cute. And honestly, the fact that he's fluffy and a good judge of character, I mean, that's literally my spirit
animal. Yeah, he was your intro.
There you go.
So next is most quotable quip. This week, my most quotable quip is, when it comes to chocolate, it's every girl for herself. Because it's definitely true. And I've definitely have been a little greedy in the past when it comes to chocolate. So
I've seen you move on a buffet, and I have to say it's admirable. For me, it would definitely be, if you don't let them in the front door, they'll sneak out the window. That is like huge, because it not only is it funny, it's also just like, you know, for me as a parent, I definitely appreciate it. It's a rule that's just all in one phrase. It's true. Like, if you don't let your kids, you know, kind of like out, if you don't let them out a little bit, you don't kind of loosen up, you know, a little bit, you know, sometimes, you know, that it's going to be harder. They're going to tighten up. They won't tell you as much, you know, they won't let you in. And then you'll kind of, you know, parenting will be a lot harder because you're kind of almost going into a dark room and you have no idea. So you have to shed a little bit of light, you know, let your kids kind of go a little bit, and then, you know, they'll come to you. So
yeah. I think by the age of 14, there's no control of your kids anymore. You might have the illusion of control, but everything's just going to happen behind your back.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you sure already have established morals and ethics. So they know what they're supposed to do. And you can like re-reference things and, you know, try to help them see the right choice. But all in the end of the day, they're going to have to make that right choice for themselves, or even make the wrong choice and then learn from it. And then that's a big thing, not only as a teenager, but as, you know, an adult and a human. Like, you have to make mistakes and you have to learn for yourself, because there's certain things you just can't take someone's word for.
Exactly. And, you know, at this point, for me as a parent, you know, I at least want my kid to come to me with problems. And if they're too scared of you, they're not going to let you in. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to confide in you, because they're going to be way, way too scared. And then you're not going to be able to help them solve these problems. They're going to run to whoever else they can. So you're just kind of hoping they have a good best friend or a good influence around. So yeah, definitely love that quip.
So fashion favorite, I am definitely being pulled in by that rust-colored skirt and plaid jacket that Cece's wearing with the fox collar. But I looked again and I saw a black and white, the black jacket with the gold buttons, the gold buckles over the shoulders, and the square holes running down the sleeves that she was wearing at the movie theater. I'm like, damn, like, that outfit is hot. Like, it is super freaking cool. Like, especially the gold buckles. I think that's really, I mean, there's definitely a selling point when you got, like, holes, you know, you got fashionable holes in your outfit, and like you got a little bit of sheerness going on, a little bit of mesh going on, something like that. And the gold buttons, fine. But those gold buckles that go over her shoulders, I was like, girl,
that was
really this is cute. Lit. Like, I would wear this fucking jacket.
For me, definitely the flower printed button up shirt tied at the waist and the light blue jeans. I kind of, you know, I'm so used to Fran wearing, you know, so much and lots of pieces. And I like that she was like really dressed down. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it was still like really cute. It looked like an outfit that you could wear now. You know what I mean? Like, fashion always comes back. And I think, you know, not even to say it was outdated. It was just really cute. I love the high waist jeans, and then paired with that yellow floral button down. But the fact that it was, you know, kind of tied to, you know, on the waist, it was just kind of like casual, but it was still really cute and well put together. And I love seeing her like that. It was kind of more casual.
Yeah, she's got a great casual fashion.
Yeah.
So for our episode ratings, it's time to see if Trish is giving another 5.
You know what? This one, this episode, even though I love the message, it got a 4 for me because I feel like it just kind of went by really fast. There were some things I would have liked to see more. Like, again, I mentioned, you know, I would have liked to see what happened in the, you know, in the movie theater a little bit more. I know, obviously, they have a storyline to follow. I would have liked to see more of Eddie because he's so cute. But then again, how much can you squeeze in like 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
But I definitely have to say it left me kind of like wanting more. And I wanted to see, like, I know the focus was on Maggie, but I kind of wanted to see more of maybe a little bit more of Grace or you know, a little bit more of, like, Brighton obviously made himself, you know, known, but I think for me, everything just went by so quickly. I wanted more of everything.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually gonna give it a 5, but I thought back to the beginning and I was like, yes, I am getting a little tired of Grace being, you know, depressed and like just being constantly referenced. The reference is getting a little tiresome for me. But as they said, the reference obviously did set up a joke with the fortune teller, the fortune cookie, like, oh, make sure she gets a good fortune. So I am a little bit more lenient on that. So all in all, I gotta say, like, that twist of Maggie being okay with Fran going, was definitely a good twist. And the twist, the big one at the end of, like, Eddie not wanting to be on a date with Fran and being totally into Maggie, that was great. I was so happy that, like, this, like, perceived as cool, pretty guys, like, really into this girl who's, like, more shy and reserved. And it's just, like, it was great. It was a great episode. So just because of the Grace thing, a little bit setback, 4.5. We're going to give it a 4.5 because it's, like, it's really close. It's really there. There's definitely a little niche that I'm, like, meh, I'm getting a little tired of that. So I hope that doesn't happen again in the episode 5. But, yeah, I mean, I'm happy with it.
I mean, I did like the beginning, too, because, you know, who doesn't like an episode with, you know, kind of like swooning over a boy?
Yeah.
You know?
So, I guess this is the end of this week's episode. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at The Nanny and Niles Pod. Email us at thenannyandnilespod@gmail.com. And you can find me on TikTok and Instagram at Dylan Gay Man.
And you can find me as TrixMix910.
Bye-bye now.
Ta-ta.